This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Rob Ferret is out today. The town of Victory, Wisconsin, on the Mississippi River in Vernon County, gets its name from the outcome of the final battle of the Black Hawk War, which took place nearby. The Battle of Bad Axe was a defeat for the Sauk tribe, but the tribe's leader, Black Hawk, is given credit for being a clever strategist. We'll find out more about Chief Black Hawk from Paul Young. He's the author of The Black Hawk War of 1832. Patrick, welcome to Central Time.
Okay, thank you.
Well, is it true that, the first Native American autobiography published in the United States was Chief Black Hawk's?
It was one of the first. It wasn't actually the first. And I think trying to pin down exactly what you could qualify as the first might be a little bit difficult, depending on some definitions. There was a Pequot Indian named William Apes who actually published an autobiography a few years before Black Hawk. I think it's safe to say that Black Hawk's autobiography was the first of an unacculturated Indian, although even that is probably a distinction that might be difficult to make. But it was one of the first for sure.
And what kinds of things did he reveal in his autobiography?
Well, the autobiography, there's a lot of debate about whether it's authentic or not, because, of course, it had to be translated from his Sauk language into English. Of course, there was an editor, William Patterson, who was the person who put it all together. Most scholars, myself included, believe that despite it's got a few flaws to it, no doubt, but it's relatively authentic. He talked mostly about his life. Probably about half of it is devoted to the Black Hawk War. A large part of it is dedicated to his service for the British during the War of 1812. He talks a lot about his life as a warrior, as a war chief among the Sauk people. And it really is probably one of the most important sources for looking at the Black Hawk War, absolutely no doubt about it.
Well, how did that war start?
Well, there's quite a lot of debate, and you know, one of the things about Black Hawk's autobiography is at some point he's sort of intentionally opaque, but a lot of what Black Hawk said in his life was not only recorded in his autobiography. It was a lot of what he said was recorded through his life by Indian agents and among the British and the U.S. My own personal feeling, and I think this was the one contribution I made to the Black Hawk War and understanding it, I think he just wanted to have a strong show of force. His tribe had signed a treaty in 1804, which mandated that it move across west to the west side of the Mississippi. And I think he thought in 1832 that if he could just put up a strong show of force, attract a lot of other regional tribes to his standard, he could force the federal government to renegotiate the 1804 treaty. But unfortunately, his warriors came into chance contact with a group of drunken Illinois militiamen. Shooting was started. People got killed on both sides. And once blood had been spilled, it was pretty much impossible to go back. Both sides kind of committed themselves to war. But personally, I think he was just trying to force the federal government's hand in a peaceful way, a firm, peaceful way, to renegotiate the 1804 treaty.
He was known as being a good strategist, someone who could negotiate that part of the war well. What is he known for?
As far as his military victories, during the Black Hawk War, he led his own warriors, which probably amounted to 400 or 500 men, in numerous small skirmishes. His hope, I think, with the initial skirmishes after the first one with the drunken Illinois militiamen, was to try to somehow throw the army off of his course, which didn't work. The real crowning point in his career as a military strategist came at the Battle of Wisconsin Heights, which was fought in the vicinity of Sauk Prairie, Wisconsin. He led 120 Indian warriors against about 700 armed militiamen from Wisconsin and Illinois. And in what was probably about a three-hour battle, he managed to hold off a far superior force while his people conducted a crossing of the Wisconsin River. And I think by any measure, any standard, that was probably his crowning achievement during the Black Hawk War and probably during his career as an Indian warrior.
Now, somewhere I like to go here in Wisconsin is Indian Lake, which is, and I'm sure the highway that it's on, but it's near Madison. Can you tell us anything about the history of that area as relates to the Black Hawk War?
Well, he certainly went through the Madison area. after the initial battle was called the Battle of Stillman's Run, and that was fought in northern Illinois. For the next month, his band hid out near Lake Koshkonong, which is by Fort Atkinson. And the U.S. military forces under General Henry Atkinson had really no idea where they were. And as I said, he led a lot of small skirmishes in the western part of Illinois and Wisconsin, hoping to throw Atkinson off, and it didn't work. After Atkinson pinpointed where his band was, Black Hawk and his people tried to make a mad dash to the Mississippi from what's today the Rock River Rapids, which is north of Watertown. He tried to basically make a real quick, you know, getaway to the Mississippi. In the process of doing that, he went by Rock Lake, which is west of Milwaukee. He also went through the Madison area. He went down the isthmus between Lake Monona and Lake Mendota, right around where the Capitol and State Street are today. So he actually, quite a lot of the Black Hawk War took place right around the city of Madison.
Ultimately, he lost the war. Mm-hmm. How did he lose it, and what happened next?
Well, there was no way he was going to win. I mean, he had 1,000 followers, half of whom were women and children. Again, one of the things that sort of leads scholars to believe he didn't intend to start a war was the fact he had, women and children and elderly people with his band. The war was not his initial plan. But once committed to war, he did his best with 500 warriors to try to fight what was always a vastly superior force. The United States was able to muster thousands of militiamen, hundreds of regular army soldiers in the region, and there was just no way he was going to win. There was just way too many forces arrayed against him. His best hope was to try to make a break for the Mississippi, and he simply was traveling much slower than the army. He fought a very successful action at the Battle of Wisconsin Heights near Sauk Prairie, but then the army caught up with him north of Prairie du Chien at Bad Axe, and that was just a massacre, and probably between starvation and just the massacre at Bad Axe, he lost probably about 500 members of his band, which probably once numbered as high as 1,100.
So what happened then? Once the war was lost, his followers were defeated. What happened the day after?
Well, the day after, the 500 survivors of his band were basically released back to the Sauk and Fox tribes. The Sauk and Fox tribes were under the leadership of another chief named Keokuk, who was a pro-American chief, and he basically had the blessings of the federal government. And he was pretty shrewd himself in a lot of ways, but he knew that fighting the United States was not going to gain either tribe any long-term advantage. So the United States basically trusted Keokuk to take what was left of the remnants of Black Hawk's band. The Black Hawk and probably about a dozen of the key leaders were kept in confinement at Jefferson Barracks outside of St. Louis for the better part of a year. Towards the end of that year, he was taken on a grand tour of the East Coast. He went to Washington, Baltimore, Philadelphia, New York. And the purpose was the United States just wanted to show him how big the United States was, how futile it was to resist the United States in any military way. And after about a year of confinement, he and the what was left of the leadership of his band, they were basically given over to Keokuk as well, under the condition that Black Hawk would have no more leadership positions and that Black Hawk would remain at peace. So, and it didn't accomplish anything. The United States basically forced both tribes to give up most of what is today eastern Iowa, basically as an indemnity for having to fight the war. So, in the end, it was really kind of a tragic loss of life for Black Hawk and his people. It was a tragic loss of more land for the Sauk and Fox tribes.
Now, you're a professor at the Milwaukee School of Engineering. How did you get to care so deeply about Chief Black Hawk?
Well, this goes back to my doctoral dissertation. When I was in graduate school, I was getting my PhD in American history. I had to choose a dissertation topic, and I became very interested in just the whole topic of Indian-white relations in the Great Lakes region. My dissertation dealt very broadly with that, and the Black Hawk War was a real central part of it. And after I had finished my doctoral work and my dissertation, I worked with the University of Oklahoma Press to take my dissertation and modify it heavily so it just focused on the Black Hawk War. And it's just one of the more dramatic events that occurred in the Great Lakes region from the time of European contact up to the reservation era.
Now, obviously, you spent a lot of time with Chief Black Hawk studying what happened during this period of history. If you could ask him one question, one lingering question that you feel like hasn't been explained yet, what would you ask him?
Oh, there's a whole bunch of them I'd have to ask him. And there's just many times I wish I could, you know, pull out a Ouija board and contact him that way. I would like to know for sure what he expected to accomplish. I mean, the sources indicate to me that what he really wanted to do when he made his stand on the eastern banks of the Mississippi in 1832 was he wanted to try to force the United States to renegotiate the treaty. I know that less because of anything explicitly than he said. I know it mostly by his actions. And in a sense, that's the best interpretation I could make. But I think that would be my first and most burning question. What did you hope to accomplish? What did you have going through your mind? What did you want to see happen? I mean, how did you see this playing out? As I say, I think I'm right, but it'd be real nice to be able to sit down and, you know, talk with them for an hour and find out if that's actually the case or not.
Well, Patrick, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
That was Patrick Young. He's a professor at the Milwaukee School of Engineering and the author of The Black Hawk War of 1832.